It's a trap!
Hello, and welcome to episode number 52 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
Carson, a few weeks ago, we were interviewing the Minnesota regional champion, Andrew LaTourelle, and both you and Andrew were talking a lot about the comparisons between X-Wing and the game of chess.
Yeah, and for me, chess and X-Wing are very much linked. At the same time I was getting into competitive X-Wing, I also got the task of coaching a middle school chess team, which prior to that, I had very little chess experience and had to quickly learn chess. As I learned X-Wing, those were not really related, just kind of happened at the same time in my life. And I found that they had an overwhelming amount of similarities.
So today we're going to talk about a lot of these similarities and how they can improve your X-Wing game. Let's get started. All right, Carson, so in your comparison of chess and X-Wing, you've kind of broken it down into the three stages of the game, which are parallel in both X-Wing and chess.
Yeah, well, actually, I just took the three stages of a chess game and compared them to X-Wing. So this is something you could find in any chess book or discuss with any chess player. You have an early game, a mid game, and a late game. Pretty basic, simple terminology, easy to grasp.
So let's start with the early game. In chess, what is the early game?
So in chess, the early game begins after all of your pieces are set up on the board, and then you start taking your opening movements. So usually you're moving a few pawns forward, then your knights, trying to open up lanes for your bishops and rooks to start moving out onto the table. What you're trying to do here is gain advantageous board position, start controlling as much of the board as possible while denying your opponent as much presence on the board as you can.
And this stage of the game actually kind of ends right when you start actually capturing pieces, and then you'll move on to the next section.
Yeah, in some cases there can be a few captures early on where you're both just denying yourself early positions. The shift from the early game to the mid game happens once all the pieces are committed. In X-Wing, this looks a bit around the time of the first engagement.
So we're counting the early game in X-Wing, basically everything from when you're actually setting up your asteroids and placing your ships, all the way through basically the round you start shooting at your opponent.
Yeah, the big difference between the early game of X-Wing and chess is X-Wing actually rewinds a bit from once you get to the table, even before you set your pieces up. That's part of the early game because of the rock placement and where you place your ships dictates a lot of the other opening objectives you're going to try and accomplish. And so those are important parts of the early game for X-Wing as well.
So let's start at the very beginning. When you get to the board, you roll for initiative, determine who has initiative, and then you go to rock placement. So what, in general, regardless of the kind of list, what are you trying to accomplish with rock placement?
Well, here is a simple X-Wing truth that I don't think many players are aware of, and that based off the collection of rocks you and your opponents both bring to the game, one of you wants those rocks to be a factor in the game and the other one does not want them to be a factor. Even if both players bring the same three large rocks or same three tiny debris fields, each matchup, there's going to be one player who wants to use the rocks to their advantage to create pressure on their opponent, and one player who wants the open space more than the other.
So effectively, one player is always going to have the advantage. Regardless of what list you bring, one player is always going to have the advantage if the rocks are more involved in the game, and one player will always be at a disadvantage if the rocks are going to be more involved in the game.
Yeah, and this can be hugely obvious or very minute, but something for a skilled player to look at is always understand which one you are, so that you can create that advantage. So even in, like, say, a mirror match, both players find the same list, even if they're both ace lists that want to arc dodge and, you know, really appreciate that open space, or even if they're both two large base ships that really don't want those rocks to stop them from shooting. If you're in a mirror match, say you're the one who failed the initiative roll and you have to go first, well, now your window to create advantage is often going to be from blocking and denying your opponent's movements because you get to move first. So you have to use that advantage, and the rocks become a big way for players to create those opportunities to mitigate the loss of initiative there.
And rock placement in X-Wing is actually a very complex and sophisticated part of the game. And it's really hard to say exactly what you want to do. It depends very much on the list you're bringing, what you're going to try to accomplish with the rocks. Today, we're not going to focus so much on exactly how you should set up your rocks, but just keep in mind that you should be very aware of how you're placing your rocks. It should never be a meaningless thing for you. You should never be like, well, I'm not sure what's going on, so I'm just going to put the rock at the 2-2 range in the corner, or I'm just going to set it here in the middle. You really want to know, okay, what do I plan on doing, and what am I hoping that first engagement is going to look like?
Right. In chess, you have the advantage that you're always up against the same list. Your opponent's always going to have 8 pawns, 2 knights, 2 rooks. So you know, okay, I can do this opening setup that I want every time. Whereas in X-Wing, you have to be a bit more reactive to the pieces your opponent chooses to bring to the table. And so you have to identify, okay, one, who wants these rocks in the middle and who doesn't. Then, okay, so after we've moved on from rock placement, then you get to your ship placement. What you're really overall trying to accomplish here is, where do I want the mid game to start taking place and how do I get to there? And that starts with rock placement, then goes on to ship placement, and then moving on to your opening maneuvers where you're going to try and steer your opponent into where you want that engagement to take place.
So to kind of summarize, rock placement is really you deciding how much you want the rocks to be involved into the game, whether that's to your advantage or your disadvantage. Ship placement is essentially you saying where you want the opening engagement to take place. And then we move on to kind of the last portion of the early game where you're doing your maneuvers and you're trying to control the board or set up board control and leave yourself with as many options as possible.
Right. And so in both placement and the ship's positioning, what you want are options, or to deny your opponent options. In placement, if you're, you know, a decimator that just wants to not give your opponent's aces any window to escape, well, then you're going to try and set up your decimator right across from them and perhaps go 4 forward and boost so that they don't have the time to set up options of escape. Whereas if you're setting up first and are not quite sure how your opponent is going to set up against you, you're going to go for a setup that gives you a lot of options to react to how they're doing. In chess, what you're trying to do in your opening maneuvers is get your pieces to positions where they have a lot of future movement options. This creates advantage just based off the versatility of options you have. And it makes it harder for your opponent to react when you're not limited to telegraphing just a few moves. In both games, whenever you move a piece, you are giving your opponent information about what's going to look like next turn. Where's that ship going to go from there? It's very similar to, okay, you moved your bishop to a position with 2 advantageous lanes. I know you're going to go 1 of 2 directions with that, and I can shut it off there. X-Wing's pretty similar. If you move your ship into a position based off how the rocks or your opponent's ships are positioned, you might only have 2 or 3 movement options. Well, now your opponent can react to those. Whereas if you put yourself in a position where you can do a range from like a 1 turn left to a 5 straight, that's a lot harder for your opponent to calculate against.
So I think I have a pretty practical example of this in X-Wing terms. I don't play a lot of chess. The list I'm flying right now is basically a Kenkirk Decimator along with a Wampa TIE Fighter and a Countdown TIE Striker. This is actually a list I saw Jordan Barrett flying. I played against him in round 6 of the Minnesota Regional, and I really liked this list, so I thought I'd give it a try, and it's been going pretty well. It's a very fun list to fly. But I do have a kind of a disadvantage in general in that I come in at pretty low pilot skills, 4, 5, and 6, so I'm often setting up my ships before my opponent does. So starting at rock placement, I'm kind of creating a cluster, generally with the rocks a little bit closer to my side of the board and clustered so that I can get my decimator in a position where he can kind of circle around them if need be and not give my opponent a lot of options. So that's kind of my rock placement, setting up for the mid game. I want them to be in a position where they can't turn around effectively. Then going to my ship placement, I tend not to commit with my ships to either side, particularly Wampa and Countdown, because even though they're high agility ships, they often, if they get focused fired, they can be blown up pretty quickly. So what you'll see me do is kind of set up my Wampa TIE Fighter towards the middle of my side of the board with hopefully a clear lane in front of me so that if I wanted to go 5 forward, 5 forward in the first 2 turns, I have that option. At the same time, I also want to get myself in a position where I can take a 1 hard turn or a 2 hard turn and kind of wait for my opponent to respond. The versatility of the TIE Fighter dial is really awesome here in that I can like take a one hard to the left, and then the following turn, if he's coming in close, I can take a one hard to the right, hopefully keep at a good range to keep my ship alive, and still have options on where I want to go. I'm not even close to the asteroids at that point, still well within the range 2 on my side of the board.
Well, and the TIE Striker has a huge advantage in that with those adaptive ailerons, you're doing two different choices of movements each turn. And so your opponent's ability to properly assess what maneuvers you're going to do is a lot more difficult because there's so much variability in the choices you make. Now, the position you put Countdown in can limit those decisions and make it easier for your opponent to predict you. But if you're doing it right and creating positions for yourself where you have a wide range of options, that can be very difficult for your opponent to track.
Well, and I really love the TIE Striker with adaptive ailerons in that you're not forced to go as fast as you are with a lot of TIE Fighters. A lot of TIE Fighters don't have like a one straight or a one bank, so you're generally committed to either one hard turning, which screws up where your arc is pointing sometimes, or going two forward or faster. I like the TIE Striker because you do actually have some cool options where I can take a one bank to maybe the right with adaptive ailerons, and then a one hard to the left, where I don't actually move that far forward, and I still have a barrel roll there if I want to modify that position even further. And then hopefully after I get my setup done, I'm in a strong position with all three of my ships, the Decimator, the Striker, and the TIE Fighter, to start pushing damage through on my opponent.
Right, and so the shift from the early game to the mid game can be a bit subtle. If there's like a open engagement that's like range 3 where there's not that much commitment in the attack quite yet, I would say the mid game probably starts the turn after that. Although some players can be very good at going from just outside of range 3 to right into range 1, at which point I would say that turn, the mid game already began.
Wouldn't you say it's effectively when some ships have to start deciding to turn around or K-turn?
I would say the point where you're deciding whether or not to K-turn, you've already entered the mid-game. It happened some point before then. It's not exactly clear in X-Wing, and even in chess, it's a little blurred. For chess, it's the point where all or most of the pieces are committed to the board. They've moved past their starting position, and this is where they're going to take place in the main exchange of the game.
Okay, so at this point, ships are basically set on engaging. They're not going to be able to break away and run away as effectively. They've really got the pressure on them, and they need to put pressure on the opponent's ships, too.
Right, and so here in chess, what you're looking for is, okay, I've set up hopefully a favorable board position based off the early game. Now I'm looking, how do I use that board position advantage to create favorable exchanges of pieces? And we'll get into a little bit more later about what that means as far as exchanging pieces, but in X-Wing, that's basically how do I gain an advantage from the combat phase of the game? How do I use that range control I applied in the early game and my proper use of actions to gain an advantage in this combat turn?
And a winning exchange in X-Wing is a little different than it is in chess, right? Because in chess, a winning exchange could look like, to put it simply, I lose a pawn, but I take a knight. Whereas in X-Wing, you really don't necessarily want to trade ships. Ideally, you win a game without having to lose any ships, but a winning exchange could be a much smaller scale than that. Basically, I take one damage, my opponent takes three damage. To me, that's generally a winning exchange, so long as I didn't lose a ship.
Right, and I look at X-Wing exchange as a bit more like a knife fight in the strategy that if you want to win a knife fight, you have to concede you're going to get cut.
Right. That's a grim comparison, but I think it...
Yeah, no real experience in knife fighting, but I apply that outlook to both chess and X-Wing.
I just treat all of life as a knife fight.
Right.
So looking at things that can help you generate winning exchanges, there's a lot of simple factors. I think a big one is arc dodging. Anytime that you are shooting and your opponent's not shooting back at you, that is an advantage to you.
Right. That advantage is what I've called like an infinite advantage, where there's no downside, so any offensive advantage you gain is 100% upside. Whereas when both ships have firing arcs on each other, okay, you have the risk of the damage being dealt to you versus the reward of the damage you can deal. And damage is much more not like I did two hits, they did one hit, but percentage of the total ship, and also looking at the investment of each of those ships.
Well, and then there's the added factor of, can I take a ship off the board? If a ship only has one damage left, even if I might take a couple damage, I'd rather take a gun off the board and risk taking that damage, because then they have one less ship shooting at me the following rounds.
Right, because that mitigates all future damage the ship you removed would deal.
So if you're not looking at something like arc dodging, that's not an option. Range control is a huge thing here, and that varies from ship to ship what range you want to be engaging at.
Right, and then you're also looking at things like action denial, so blocking. It might be worth it for one of your ships to not get a shot so that your other ships can get shots on a ship with no defensive actions.
And a key block here can also provide you a huge advantage in X-Wing. In general, both players want to focus their fire. They want to not be shooting at multiple ships. They want to put damage through on a single target so they can take that off the board. If you want to set up a winning exchange, you can put your opponent in a position where they are forced to shoot at different ships. So I'm going to move in with a key block here. I might not be shooting at the ship I'm blocking, but now my opponent's three ships all have to shoot at different targets. And that's a huge advantage here.
Right, and you can also do things like stratify the ranges of your ships. So the ships that they want to target the most, your most valuable ships, are placed farther back so you'll get more defensive modifications, whereas your low-value ships are creating a greater threat because they have range one shots. This allows you to make your opponent make suboptimal choices while you're getting optimal advantage. That's really how do you create the scenario where your attacks are advantageous and your opponent's attacks are disadvantaged.
Well, and the key goal here is maybe one of the biggest factors is if you are going to take damage, like you said, this is a knife fight, you're going to get stabbed. If you are going to lose ships, you want to generate really strong winning exchanges here by trading up your ships, right?
Right. So a Z95 or a TIE fighter is not looking to survive the game. They're looking to take more points than they were worth, which is easy because they don't cost that much. So if they take anything, they made up.
And this is one of the reasons I actually love the Wampa TIE Fighter in my list. The Wampa TIE Fighter is a 14-point standard TIE Fighter whose ability allows him to cancel all dice results when he's attacking. And if you cancel a crit, it deals a face-down damage card. So he has a pretty cool, versatile ability, especially when combined with Emperor Palpatine on my Decimator. But he only comes in at 14 points. And these last several games I've been playing, he's a strong enough threat against a lot of ships. In particular, ships like the Inquisitor or Corran Horn are really afraid of him because he deals his damage under shields, so they can be killed in two shots if he's able to generate a crit on those shots. So he's a strong enough threat there. At the same time, he only cost me 14 points in my list. So if I can get all of my opponent's ships to focus fire on him, even for just a couple rounds, if he can survive those engagements by staying at range three or using his evade token or my Palpatine on defense if I have to, I would rather him take a whole lot of shots. Maybe I lose him still, but this has given me an advantage here that now maybe I'm going to focus fire and take down a more costly ship on my opponent's list.
Right. Wampa has good enough offense output that annoying him is troublesome for your opponent, but is also frustrating to take down, where it's really hard to eliminate him in one turn, which for that cheap of a ship, you really don't want to spend multiple turns taking down.
Hey, Radio TCX listeners, just a quick update for our Patreon supporters. We are still waiting on our acrylic manufacturer to get moving on those tokens. I spoke with him recently. He's got some of his equipment back up and running. I'm not sure exactly where our order fits in with the rest of the orders he's backlogged on, but hopefully we'll be able to get you some more positive updates in the near future.
We will, of course, still be maintaining our monthly raffle. If you want to be eligible for this month's raffle, please become a patron before March 1st.
You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/radiotcx. A huge thank you to everyone who's continued to support us through our Patreon. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Now, back to the cast.
So our early game was us setting up and then establishing board control or a presence on the board. Our mid-game was creating favorable or winning exchanges on the board through a variety of means, range control, arc dodging, trading up on ships, all those different advantages we try to get. What does the late game, when does that begin?
I think the easiest way to know you're in the late game is when you're asking yourself, okay, how do I get out of this? When you are down to just one ship versus multiple of your opponents, and you're looking for how do I dig my way back up? That's a clear indicator you've moved into the late game. In chess, the late game begins after a clear advantage has been gained by one player during the mid game. So their opponent lost more of their pieces. Now it's clear one person has a definitive advantage. And then what the late game is how do you use that advantage to quickly snowball and eliminate the rest of your opponent's pieces so you can get it down to just the king, or quickly close the game out from the advantage you've gained.
So let's look at this. There's basically two perspectives here. You're either the advantaged player, the one who's got the lead, you've destroyed a lot of ships, your opponent hasn't destroyed as many, and then there's also the disadvantaged player, the one who's trying to basically catch up on their opponent or get themselves back into control. So starting with the advantaged player, what is their ultimate goal here? What are they trying to do to close out the game?
So the advantaged player is trying to maintain the win without conceding anything else. So I don't want to lose any more MOV points or just minimize the MOV loss from here on out. In some ways, got the win, you just have to hold on to it.
They also want to avoid taking unnecessary risks, right? Where you can give your opponent opportunities to get back into the game or put them in the position of the advantaged player.
Right. So X-Wing has this added element that chess doesn't, where any combat phase, if your opponent has a shot on you, they have a chance to swing back based off the variance of the dice pool and the nature of the critical damage deck. So what you want to do is put yourself in positions where you are very certain or can guarantee you will still maintain your advantage and really avoid risky stuff. It's better at that point, once you're the advantaged player, to, if you need to, disengage and wait for a favorable exchange, because you're up on points, you still maintain the advantage if you go to time. It's better to just make sure you stay winning or to get the highest MOV possible, which means not losing anything else.
So I have a good example of this, too, from when I was playing at regionals, one of my Swiss rounds. A match I did end up winning, but I took an unnecessary risk and it cost me a great deal of MOV. So I was playing with my Miranda Donnie Dash Rendar build. I was in a position where I was clearly the advantaged player. I don't remember exactly what my opponent was flying, but they had a Fen Rao on their list and then a few other ships. I was successful in taking down their other ship, so it was just Fen Rao with, I believe, one damage on him. My Miranda with, I think, just hull left, and then my Dash Rendar was doing fine. I was in a position where his Fen Rao was pointing at my Miranda Donnie at about range 2. It was getting pretty close, but it was not range 1. And I had my Miranda Donnie in a position where she was pointing at him. I weighed my options here. I went, well, I could take a shot at this range, likely take some damage, but I'd probably come out okay. Or if I'm trying to avoid any damage, I can just slam 3 forward, bump into him, and then he won't have any shots. In this case, it was actually the riskier maneuver because I misjudged the range there, and suddenly I plop myself directly in front of him at range 1, unable to shoot back. And that ended up costing me a lot because the dice skew went in his favor. He rolled perfect hits, and I had no defense, and he blew up my Miranda in that one shot.
Well, and Fen Rao's a great ship for when the variance goes your way because he has a huge dice pool, so it can swing one way or the other really big. And when you need to come back, Fen can do it just because if the variance is on your side, Fen can create that advantage.
So in a case like this, I clearly made a mistake. I should have been more cautious about judging range. I would have been probably just fine taking that range 2 shot. He would have gotten 3 dice instead of his 5 dice at range 1. I would have taken a couple damage, but probably would have been okay, and he wouldn't have been able to turn around the next turn.
Right. Well, the other lesson is to just guess your maneuvers a little bit better.
Thanks, Carson. Yeah, I got that now. But so I did end up winning that game, but I lost 52 points of margin, probably completely unnecessarily, had I played a little stronger and thought through my advantage a little bit better. So looking at the other end of this, what are you trying to accomplish as the disadvantaged player?
So as the disadvantaged player, you're looking to your outs. Okay, how do you get back into this game? And often that is, okay, I need to make the high risk, high reward plays, because at this point you're already losing, so it doesn't really matter if the variance goes against you. You just need to put yourself in a position where hopefully the variance is in your favor.
And there's enough risk and reward in X-Wing where you might go, well, I'd rather take this opportunity here by boosting in that I have a higher damage potential, take a ship off the board and suddenly shift that advantage maybe back in my favor, or just bring the game back into balance a little bit. Whereas if you're on the offense, if you're the advantage player, you're going to be less inclined to take those kind of maneuvers.
Right. And in chess, what you're doing is trying to deny your opponent getting any more of your pieces and create scenarios where they might slip up, make the wrong play so that you can claw back in. And so this is what you want to do in X-Wing also. Maybe you'll go for the aggressive block, try to trap them on a rock, things like that. So you want to be a bit more bold, obviously trying to hold on to dearly whatever ships you still have left on the table. It's not easy, but identifying that is key to understanding when to make that shift and start making the aggressive plays. All right, so now we're just going to sum up what we've gone over. So starting with the early stage of the game, your goal is to identify where you want that opening engagement to take place, and then back all the way up from rock placement to ship placement to your opening maneuvers. How do you get there? Always keeping in mind that a wide range of options for future turns creates opportunity to generate that advantage.
And then the mid-game begins when all of your ships are committed. You're basically at the point of no return. You're going to engage with your opponent, or you've already started engaging with your opponent. At this point, you're just trying to generate winning exchanges, making decisions that minimize your losses while pushing as many advantages as you can get, shooting when they can't shoot back, making them split fire, all these different elements.
And then from there, you've hopefully generated a clear advantage so you can move on to the late game, where your goal is to maintain and grow your advantage while not conceding any more MOV points or to minimize your future MOV loss. Or if the early and mid game didn't quite go your way and you're disadvantaged, well, now you want to first deny any further loss and create opportunities for your opponent to allow you back into the game.
And this isn't every nuance here. There's still a lot of comparisons, I think, to be made, Carson, between chess and X-Wing, like we've been talking about.
Absolutely. There's many more comparisons between chess and X-Wing. We just wanted to give you a nice base value to understand, which we've referenced it many times in our previous episodes. And so this is a nice launch pad for those references. There's definitely a lot more we could go on to about like the value of pieces. But for now, we like our episode short, so we'll cut it off here.
Hopefully this has been a good primer in kind of the fundamental three stages of X-Wing. So hopefully this will give you a new perspective and help you become a better X-Wing player and possibly a better chess player.
Yeah, don't forget to look a few turns ahead.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please consider going on to facebook.com/Radio TCX and liking our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please consider going on to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review, leaving a comment sharing what you like about the podcast and why other X-Wing players might be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/Radio TCX and become a supporter of the show today.
Again, guys, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. It's a trap.